Welcome to Alchemical Dialogues, an Amber Light podcast. Join Dr. Henry Critella, Kathleen Fitzpatrick, Darren Toot, and Louise Richardson discuss couples on a spiritual path.
Those of you that are new, this is a new experiment for us, and we're doing it on video conference. And other people are Zooming in, and we'll have a chance to make comments or ask questions. But the idea is to have certain people talking about topics of interest, and that's pretty broad. And we'll do that for a while and then open it up to the other people. So this topic is about couples on a spiritual path. Even that's not correct. It's about couples, and when one or both of them are on a spiritual path, or different paths, or one is on a path and the other is not, or something in that ballpark. Darren, how about if you start?
Okay. I've been a spiritual seeker since preteen years and always interested in spiritual topics. So that's been a very consistent part of my life. And what I noticed was that over time I became much more aware that that was a factor in relating to people and a factor in choosing who I was going to associate with. At first I thought of it as kind of, you know, somebody with ethics or somebody who walked their talk, like I was using kind of common terms for it. And then after a while I realized, no, it's really just anybody who kind of has some kind of spiritual inclination. It doesn't particularly matter what spiritual path somebody's following, but I find, you know, and they may not even call it a spiritual path. I remember there was some close friend who claimed he was a rational humanist. I think that was the term. And you know, he said, oh, I'm not spiritual at all. But, you know, he had all the ethical and social considerations and a connection to something more than human, but he didn't call it God in those days. But you know, it was over time I realized how consistent that is. It's not like I require it, but it's a pretty good indication. And it's not, the other comment I would say in terms of my background is it's not particularly religious. Like, I'm not really a follower of dogma or static beliefs, but more like, okay, how do we relate in changing situations, and particularly in difficult situations? I think those are really the things that inspire our humanity. That's kind of a bit of my background. Louise and I met more than 15 years ago at a Sufi retreat, and we were in conversation at that point with some job situation that we had in common. Then over the years, we kept in contact. And then about 5 years ago, we resumed contact in much, much closer and personal. Before that, it was kind of, you know, business related and how things were going at work. And then we were getting more personally involved. And so we've been together for about 5 years, and I don't know. That's pretty well it.
Married for four.
Hey, Louise, your turn, apparently.
Yeah. So it was a pretty quick courtship in that sense. It was very similar to Darren in the sense that I was aware of spirituality. And then at that time, I called it religion when I was a little girl, like 7, 8. And we went to church. My mother was raised Catholic, and so was my father. And I would go to French Mass on Sundays and English Mass, depending on which church I chose to go to. or that my mother chose to drag us to. And as I found, I really loved going to church in the sense of the ritual of it, the music. I got to count the hats, all of that kind of stuff. And then my older siblings, as they would tend to do in their teens, began to lose interest and started talking rather negatively about the church and that they didn't believe in God. And I was really crushed by that idea that all of this, that all of these people that were sitting in this church were wrong. And I couldn't believe that. There was a part of my brain that just could not believe that there wasn't some kind of higher power out there. So I started stumbling upon various organizations in Ottawa. It was the Baha'i group that I had met and sat and had a conversation with, not me personally, because I was still pretty young and completely intimidated by all of these young adults sitting around and talking about life and drinking coffee and smoking and all that kind of thing. And it really opened up a door. I was thirsty for knowledge. I think in about my mid-20s, when I got married the first time, I was interested in another path, but I didn't know what it was. So I was reading about Buddhism and all kinds of different faiths, but still kind of had a foot in the door with the Catholic Church. So I started with the Sufis was it 2003 when we met?
In 2003, yeah.
Yeah. So I think it was 2001 or 2002, where I went to a zikr at a friend's house, and that was my first interaction, and I was completely blown away by it. And I just wanted to learn more and more. And as Darren had mentioned, we met at a Sufi retreat, and we became friendly, but we were both in different relationships at that point, and he wasn't even living in Ottawa either at that time. So he would come and we would get together and we would have dinner and we would talk about work, as he was saying. And that was about as far as it went. It was just a friendship. And I always thought he was too good looking. That I was thinking about him with some tall blonde, you know, because I'm not tall and I'm not blonde. So, but we always stayed in touch. And as he was saying, when we reconnected 5 years ago, we were both at really different places at that time. And I think we were both ready. Yeah. So we've been dancing around for 15 years, but we didn't sit down.
Thanks. Kathleen, you want to go?
Sure. My path is very similar to what I've already heard from Arif and Habiba, in that having been raised in Roman Catholicism, but becoming disillusioned with that quite early on in childhood, and then beginning to search and feeling, as Louise did, there is something out there. I don't think it's what I've been told or programmed to believe in per se, but I knew there had to be something, because everything exists. So it came from somewhere. It didn't come from me, it came from somewhere. So I began searching, especially after I became a mother. I felt like there had to be some kind of framework for spirituality in the family. Although I never imposed anything on my children, tried going back to the Catholic Church and that didn't work. Began reading in Buddhism and reading Thomas Merton, and then coming across the teachings of Nayak Khan and meeting my spiritual teacher and thinking, well, this guy's for me, Shahabuddin. And taking initiation in 1989 and belonging to a spiritual path, working deeply in that spiritual path, and then after many, many years, coming to a point of separating from that spiritual path and embracing the teachings of not only that spiritual path, but others as well. And I think becoming much more of a universalist in my own orientation. And working with a partner who is also a spiritual seeker and, if I may say so, a tremendous thinker and doer, Wadud. So with that, Andre, I'd like to hear what you have to say.
So for me, I grew up in the Roman Catholic religion, which was important because it was important to my parents, and I went to a Catholic school and had a lot of religion classes. And I'm not sure it was ever meaningful to me, except the Catholic guilt to me is a real thing. So a lot about sin, and that got through to me. But did it affect my life in a positive way besides trying to stay out of what I was told was trouble? I'm not sure. And I think that's what happened when I became a teenager. I went to a Catholic high school. I also went to a Catholic college. But I became more and more disaffected. And the choice of the high school and college had to do with the quality of the education that was around where I lived. It had nothing to do with it needing to be Catholic. And in high school in particular, I was teaching Sunday school classes and then stopped everything because I realized that I really didn't believe it. So anyways, I stopped practicing somewhere in high school, and that continued. And I went to medical school and religion wasn't important. And then I started my residency in psychiatry. The partner I was with then, religion wasn't important. She was also a lapsed Catholic, so we would commiserate about that and what Catholicism had done to us. Seriously, I don't have pleasant, it didn't do anything atrocious. I wasn't abused or anything like that. But if Jesus is about love, I didn't get that feeling when I was growing up. So anyways, the change for me came somewhere in, I was doing well as a psychiatrist, and it just, there was something missing. There was not enough meaning in my life, and I was really aware of that. And it was a search for more meaning. And that's when I started to explore, and I knew I didn't want to go back to religion. So I actually explored shamanism for a little bit, but it just didn't feel like me banging on a drum and trying to imagine traveling through a hole in the earth. It just didn't work. And I met Kathleen around that time, and she had some native contacts, indigenous people. So we started talking about that. But I knew she was on another path, which I didn't know anything about, and I didn't really ask a whole lot. And then when we started dating, it's interesting that to me, this has not come up in what any of the four of us have been saying right now. I did not get attracted to her specifically because she was Sufi or she was on a spiritual path. That did not even cross my mind. I wasn't searching for that. So for example, if I were going to go on a dating site, I don't know what I would put about, you know, is religion important? But what I wouldn't do is go looking for Sufis. So that never even crossed my mind. So I fell in love with Kathleen, and I think she fell in love with me, not because we were looking for a specific kind of spirituality. We fell in love because we loved each other and the way I loved her and how she was. And I did like what she was interested in. I liked that she was interested in meaning and being kind to people and treating people a certain way. But it wasn't like, well, it has to be a card-carrying spiritual practitioner. It wasn't like that at all. And then after we got together, I really wanted something more definite. And because of the way we got together, and that's another story, I didn't think it was going to work with Sufism. She remained on a Sufi path, but there were some issues about the other people and whether I would really be part of that group. And I really got attracted to Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism. And I studied that for about 6 years, and Kathleen supported me, and she came to meetings. She even took refuge once, even though she continued to be sincerely Sufi. And little by little, I started asking her about her tradition and going to a couple of retreats and then meeting her spiritual teacher. And then after 2 years, I was studying Buddhism, and it became very intellectual. I didn't feel the teachers really saw me. And I would go to one or two Sufi gatherings a year, and I would cry. And I remember coming back and telling my Buddhist group, I don't get this. I come to classes every week. I go on Buddhist retreats. I go to one Sufi event, and I can't stop crying. And like you, Habiba, I went to a zikr, and it blew my mind. And zikr is a chanting service where you chant particular names. And I really was attracted to the Sufi teacher I met, who happened to be Kathleen's teacher. And he saw me, and I knew it. I just knew it from the way he looked. And that has not changed. I mean, I initiated in 2001. It was really helpful to have Kathleen on that path. I know that. I think I would have done it anyways. But I'm not sure I would have met the Sufis if I hadn't been with Kathleen. So that was like an accident of the universe.
I think there was a tractor beam involved.
There might have been, but I don't know that. That's another story. We have a funny story that maybe we'll get to. But it's, I don't know if I would have met the Sufis had I not met Kathleen. But I didn't meet Kathleen because she was a Sufi. But because we were both interested in each other, and wanted to support what was meaningful for each other, we supported our spiritual explorations. I wanted her to be more Buddhist. She was much better about that than me. She would just support me and say, okay, but you know, this is what I love, but I support what you're doing. And that was okay. But I have a streak in me that I wanted us to be on the same path, but we weren't forcing each other. But I just know this about us, that I would have liked that better. And that's not the reason I left the Buddhist path. I really left it because I knew nobody was seeing what was inside of me. And I wasn't getting the kind of guidance that it felt very cookie cutter to me. And when I met the Sufi teacher and got a chance to talk to him, that's the story, over a number of years, there was no doubt that there was something very personal. And I just didn't want to lose that. And then I think it's been really helpful to be on the same path together. Things speeded up for both of us. We got really involved in the organization. We don't do practice on this path. Like any mystical path, you have individual spiritual practice. And I know there are some couples, we can talk about this later, who practice together. Kathleen and I never do that. We do our own practices by ourselves, and we don't tell each other's practices for the most part, which is part of the deal on a mystical path. You keep it private. But we go to classes together, and we teach together now, and we go to retreats together. But we're not the kind of couple that want to sit down every morning and pray together. She does her own practices or not. I don't even know. And I do my own or not. But we don't do it as a couple. And I don't want to do that. It's so private to me. I just want to do it. I'll do it in a big group, like in a group retreat. I love the group practice. I just don't feel the calling to do it as a couple.
That's actually never even crossed my mind.
Yeah, it's interesting. We left the organization we belonged to, which is now called the Anaiti Order. And that was really hard for both of us. And there's so much we could talk about. That brought up an issue as a couple, because in the beginning, it wasn't clear we both wanted to do that. It took a while to work that out. So there's good news, bad news. The good news is, after a while, the organization did it for us because we just couldn't do it anymore. We just didn't want to be part of this organization. But in the beginning, when that issue was developing, there was a real question about, well, what if I want to do this, but you don't? And we're both leaders in the organization. Can we do this? And what does that mean? And it was, we had to talk about that. It was really clear to me, like I said, the universe helped because we didn't have to talk about it very much after a while, because it was really clear to both of us, this just is not our cup of tea anymore. It had nothing to do with the spirituality or the spiritual path. It only had to do with the organization. And we supported each other, thought about it, and handled it our own way. I got into counseling. I met with a counselor that my Sufi teacher actually recommended. And that took me 2 years, and it really helped me. And Kathleen and I would talk about that. But that was an issue for us as a couple. So it worked out the way it worked out. Both of us could honestly say, I think, we became dissatisfied with the organization to the point we didn't want to be part of it. I don't know what would have happened if one of us felt that way and the other one didn't, and what that would have meant, which is an interesting, you know, we could have an intellectual exercise about that. But the reality is the universe helped us make a joint decision.
At the end, but there were times in the process where we were in different places about that.
Right. Mm. And I know what we talked about was how important it was that we didn't feel like we were being made to do something because of the other person.
Mm-hmm.
For myself, there were things I would like Kathleen to do, but it's like, I hope you come to your own decision and it's one that I like, but I can't tell you to do it. You know, isn't that a funny, it's kind of like, and how do you know? You just, you know.
So, now I mean, I'm wondering, what are those things?
Well, you know, one of the things that came up is I was getting more upset, and she said, well, you expect me to leave if you leave? And I say, no, you have to make your own decision. And then she said, well, what about you? And I said, well, if you leave, I leave. It's obvious to me. She said, really? I said, yeah, I'm not going to be a leader in this organization if you're not going to be. And that, for a moment, it felt like, oh, like, why is it so obvious to me? I can't even tell you why it was obvious. Mm-hmm. I was dissatisfied enough that it wouldn't have taken much for me to say, oh, the heck with this. And if you happen to make that decision, what I felt in my heart was, I don't even know if I told Kathleen this, you are so important to me that I wouldn't even, this isn't worth even thinking that there might be a strain because of this. But again, that is on the foundation of, I was already dissatisfied. If I was totally in love with it and she decided this isn't for me, I don't know, you know? What I know is I would say, I really don't want you to do this, or I really want you to do this, but I respect you. You have to make your own decision. But it's interesting. It would have been interesting to see if I could walk my talk when it came to that.
It's really interesting that you say that, because when Darren and I reconnected in 2015, I wasn't on this path. I had taken initiation and I did that, and then I left and vowed that I was going to do something else, that there was another path for me. So I went back into my yoga practice, which I had started in my 20s, but there was always something about the Sufi path that attracted me. I was invited to go see Pir Zia when he was presenting in Toronto, and in that 10-year span, I had my friends who I had somewhat kept in touch with, Darren being one of them, was saying, well, why don't you come see Pir Zia? Why don't you come see Wajid? He's going to be here in Ottawa. And I would always say no.
I didn't say that.
No, you didn't say it. No. but
just for the record.
No, we didn't really talk much about Sufism then, because I was pretty negative about anything to do with Sufism. So I don't know what happened, but a friend of mine said, Pir Zia is going to be in Toronto. Why don't you come with me?
And I said, okay. And I have no idea why I said it. And I went to Toronto and he was there. And we were sort of, we had reconnected.
I'm the he.
Yeah. He here. And we had somewhat reconnected before we had gone to Toronto, but we really connected when we were in Toronto. And I hadn't decided. I hadn't decided that I was going to come back to this. And I saw Pierzia and something, it was just like a bell went off in my head. And I started to talk to Darren and he recommended that I talk to Henry and see what I could do. Coming back to the path that Darren was already on, so he never left in that period, but I had. So did I feel that there was pressure for our relationship? No, not in the least. And he didn't seem to mind. I was still practicing yoga and teaching it, and I was working full time, and I had a pretty busy life then. Mm-hmm. But there was something about going to classes and reconnecting with those people that I had left behind. So it was sort of a natural thing for us to talk about Sufism and our path. What became difficult for me was when I was being encouraged to take training to become a coordinator, to become a representative. And at first, those things were challenging for me because Darren was at a completely different level. So I felt somewhat pressured to get these certifications because he had already done it because of his exposure within the organization. And then after a while, I had to stop thinking that way because it was putting too much pressure on me with everything else I had going on. But more specifically, it was, am I doing this just to make him happy? We didn't fight about it or anything like that. I felt very conflicted, and because I was also having experiences at this time, spiritual experiences that I was trying to understand and interpret. And then, oh, well, go take this training and go do this. And oh, by the way, you've got, you know, three books due on Friday, everything else. And then we were becoming serious, and Darren was going to go on a
long personal retreat.
Yeah, a long personal retreat in California, in Berkeley. And I thought our relationship was done. He was going to leave on retreat and he was going to come back and say, I don't want to see you again.
She didn't tell me about that expectation. You know, I could have gone to the retreat and say, okay, this is my objective on the retreat. But mm-hmm. I didn't know about that.
I had just heard so many stories about people going on retreat and then coming back and saying, I don't want to be with you anymore.
Well, what was interesting was, like, totally not knowing that she had this kind of supposition. I didn't know it, and my retreat guide didn't know it, but my retreat guide said something very unusual. Said, okay, one of the things that you have to do on retreat is actually maintain contact with Louise. And I part of me kind of was like, oh, that's kind of unusual, because normally on retreat, you really go into silence and deep introspection, deeply internal. And so this was like, okay, you have to do that deep internal stuff, but you have to maintain this personal connection and go on your computer daily and do email. And I was like, okay, this is going to be really a challenge. So, but I had no idea until I came back home, and she's like, oh, you still like me? And I was like, well, yeah. Like, that's not going to change.
So he comes home, I pick him up from the airport, right? And he goes back to his place. We go back to his place. He had his apartment in Ottawa, and I was out in Elmont. It's about 30 kilometers away. And we had decided we were going to go to Montreal. So I had booked this hotel, and it had a hot tub, and, you know, everything was really nice. And so we went to Montreal, and we came back home, and he came over to my place the next night, and he never left.
I guess he liked you pretty well.
Right. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. And I'm living in this really tiny place, too.
Yeah, it was pretty small.
So it's interesting, because Kathleen started on the leadership path in the organization we used to be part of. At the same time I did, even though she had been part of the group for like 15 years before on her own. And I know there was some attention paid to having us pretty close together in terms of leadership levels and things that we were doing. I don't think it was absolute. I never felt like it was, well, you have this appointment because she does or vice versa. I really didn't feel that. Mm-hmm. But I know there was some attention, and I'm really thankful for this, that at least from our guide, we happen to have the same guide. So that there was some attention to the balance between the two of us and a realization that spiritual practice and development, including organizationally, can have an effect on a relationship, and it can be both ways. So I felt like we were deepening together, and it let us share a lot. And I love to teach. That's more important to me, I think, than to Kathleen. So she's supportive, and it took us a while to work that out, but that's really my thing. And she supports that. She's into much more, she's more of an activist outside of the Sufi order, but even in it, I think she's more of a doer and likes to march and create programs like that. I like to teach and think and read and do and develop that way. So we started developing in different ways, but still there was that paying attention to how it affects the relationship. You know, I've heard stories from others who they lost their relationship because there was an imbalance in the organizational development. A friend of mine actually told me that her husband left, and when they discussed it after the fact, what happened, he said, "You were advancing farther than me and I couldn't take it."
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't think they ever talked about it. It's a little bit like you were afraid Arif, you know, was going to come back, and
yeah,
there you are. He's at a different place and you're not part of it anymore. But that hasn't been, if anything, I feel like it's being on the same path and also progressing in an outer way as well as an inner way. Appointments as leaders and guiding people and dealing with issues like that. To me, that really helped our relationship, common interests and common struggles, and we could support each other.
Well, I find that there's lots of things that, like, for example, Louisa was and is continuing very involved in the yoga community, close involvement with the teaching side of it. And so there's things relating to that, like something very recent that happened in that community that I can totally relate to, even though I don't understand the specifics, but I can totally relate to, you know, they had this really charismatic teacher who's passed away some time ago. And then it came to the point where it could no longer be hidden that he had done some things that were now judged as reprehensible. And, you know, that was really something that I could relate to. Like, okay, there was this person that I looked up to. I've discovered some things about their personal situation that, you know, can I still feel good about their teachings? How does the person relate? And so there was all kinds of things that I could really relate to. And talking to her about the way that various teachers were coping with it, the way that students were coping with it, you know, what's going to be the effect on the organization. So there's things that, like, I understand, even though I'm not involved with yoga specifically, and vice versa, like there's things that I'm experiencing, and, you know, I can express those to her and really feel like, well, one of the things that's important is to be able to express what's the subtleties of what I'm wrestling with. Like there's a spiritual organization that I'm involved with, and there's somebody that things aren't sitting very well with that person right now. And so there's this discussion about like, okay, can we both participate in this organization even though we're not really in agreement and we're not, and things are not in, on good terms between us, but can we kind of, you know, you use all kinds of terms. Can we bracket that? Can we put it aside? Can we adjust for it and still have a spiritual relationship? And, you know, that's something that I feel really valuable, to be able to have Louise as a sounding board to say, okay, well, here's the subtlety of what I'm dealing with. And rather than getting some kind of like, well, that's okay because you guys are all weird anyway. Mm-hmm. Like at some point I was trying to express something to my son and he just looked at me for a while and he was like, you know, that's really nice, Dad, but you know, you got to realize all your friends are nuts and flakes. I was like, oh, okay. You know, right. Weird perspective. But when I talked to Louise about it, it's like, okay, well, she can catch the subtleties of things. And for example, you know, if you feel like, okay, well, are you going to participate in, you know, in the shaming of somebody, or, you know, am I going to stand up and shake my fist and say, I always thought he was a good person and now I'm upset? Or am I going to go like, well, try to advocate for the person or speak out? Or like, there's all kinds of things, and we can explore that ourselves and have some kind of space, like a safe but also constructive space that we can talk about. And rather than being kind of mooted and have to like just not talk about a certain portion of my life, I can really bring that into our personal conversation. We don't always agree. I mean, that's,
no, we certainly don't.
But it's useful because, you know, it's like, okay, I just have to vent about this situation. After explaining it, she might have some questions. And she might say, well, you know, I have a suggestion if you're interested. And that's like having some disinterest, somebody who doesn't have an axe to grind or doesn't have a some kind of agenda to kind of share and go, yeah, okay, maybe I am getting upset about it. You know, and then actually getting in touch, like, okay, what is it that I'm getting upset about? And then, you know, okay, now I'm really getting in touch with what it is that's bothering me about this situation. You know, that's really useful to have that space, because sometimes I find I have to talk about something in order to understand it. Like I know what I'm feeling, but the subtlety until I can actually verbalize it. And then when I verbalize it, I say, oh, okay, that's what's really bothering me. Like, you know, there was something that was really bothering me about a certain person. And it took me a while to realize I just don't get the vibe that person is authentic. I get the vibe consistently that they're kind of play acting, that they're playing the role. And then when I expressed that to somebody else, they were like, oh yeah, he's totally an actor. You know, he's well, they even called him a player. He's totally a player. And I was like, whoa, I'm not sure I would use those words, but it was really validating to hear that somebody else had detected that and come to that conclusion. And you know, it's not something like, it's kind of, you know, there's some unease, but it becomes more focused after discussion of it. And I find that that's one really valuable thing that, you know, I can talk over with Louise and, you know, we say, well, like one of the things that we talked about is, you know, you've been taught a certain practice, okay? Pronunciation, for example, pronunciation and cadence and you know, what you do, how you do this practice. And then you go to a retreat and somebody does it and they do it differently in a way that you've been specifically taught not to do it. It's like, okay. So, you know, and this is something that we've talked about, like, do you correct that person? Do you just go along with it? Do you, you know, go up and go to the bathroom? Like, you know, and then it's kind of like, when you have more people, you can develop more ideas about different ways of coping with it. One of our beloved teachers, Davy, you know, in one of her talks, she's like, you can always go to the bathroom. Nobody objects if you say, I'm going to the bathroom right now.
Okay.
You know, but having people where you can like say, oh, okay, maybe I'm not completely out to lunch with this feeling, you know, with my reading of the situation. So it kind of normalizes my experience.
So as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, I'm not sure two people have to be on a spiritual path to do that, or have to be on the same path, or anything. As I was listening to you, I'm thinking, what's important to me is that somebody I love respects and honors what's meaningful to me and can listen to me, be available, can talk to me about it. And if they're on the same path, we talk about it one way. If they're not on the same path, we might talk about it a different way. But I still feel like, yeah, I know you're really into this and I respect that, even if I think it's not for me. I think I could do that. I think that would be important to me. But I'm not convinced you have to be on the same path. And in fact, like the example I told you that my friend said, being on the same path could actually get in the way.
Yeah.
That somebody thinks the track you're on is not as meaningful, and why are you doing that? Or why aren't you going on a leadership track? And why isn't this more important to you? You say you're a Catholic, or you say you're a Sufi, but you're not doing this or that. To me, it just feels like I want to be on the same track that meaningfulness is honored and respected between us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that's, to me, that's part of spirituality. I'm not sure other people would define it that way.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's part of a path.
I did have experience in the past with a partner who very much treated me like my whole spiritual side was to that person an aberration.
Yeah.
It was weird. You can go, you know, it's like I went cave diving or something like that. You know, it's like, okay, you can go do that, dear. And then, you know, when you've had your fill of it and you come back and you wash off the mud, and we'll do something together. But there was no kind of interest if I expressed some, you know, kind of conundrum or frustration with it. My then partner would really not be interested in hearing it, would kind of, you know, their eyes would glaze over and they're like, okay, you know, so are we going out for dinner or are we staying in? And it's like, oh, okay. I realized that was something that I was going to value a lot more in the future, was having that kind of respect for personal things that the other partner's going through.
Yeah.
That is the word that was coming to my mind as the necessary quality is respect.
Mm.
And while I was listening, I was also thinking about couples that are in the public eye who are on different sides of the political aisle. And that one to me would be a lot harder than having one Sufi and one Buddhist.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think one person being contemptuous of the other in any condition would, for me, be intolerable.
Yeah.
And so the respect and the tolerance is bottom line requirement for me, both in spiritual and in whatever you might call non-spiritual condition.
There's some pretty intolerant religious so-called spiritual people, right? I mean, our topic is about couples and spiritual path, and just being on a spiritual path doesn't mean that this respect kind of comes automatically. In fact, What I'm trying to say is I've met a lot of spiritual and or religious people who can't show respect. It's just, it doesn't come with it. You know, it's my way or the highway. And I think that that's more important to me, like Kathleen is saying.
Because Darren was still on the Sufi path and I wasn't when we reconnected, I didn't think any less of him or anything like that because of where I was at. But I found that we could converse fairly comfortably and talk about the differences between the yogic path and the Sufi path. And a lot of times we still do what he was saying earlier about having a different perspective. And he's often said, well, this is happening. And I say, well, in yoga, we need to talk. Not that I'm trying to say that that's better or anything like that, but it was just a different way of doing things. And then when I came back on the Sufi path, it was a very rewarding experience for me. We could actually talk on the same, I keep wanting to use the word level, and he understood a lot of what I was going through, or I had questions, which I seemed to have an endless supply of. He was really good and very patient. So from that perspective, I really appreciated that and found that my own training, when I did go into it, was very rewarding in that sense.
So now I think we're coming to one of the questions that was asked of me earlier by one of our friends, which is say more about feeling more universalist. And I kind of wish I hadn't said universalist and more like universal. So I've been thinking about that since the question came through. And what I'd like to say about it is that I actually feel more integrated. So like Louise, I also have a yoga practice and I have a martial arts practice, both of which are spiritual in their own way, in a way that's somewhat perhaps different from what I felt I was doing as a good card-carrying Sufi. And in addition to that, I have a practice as a social justice activist, which is spiritual to me. So I think that in my experience now, I'm becoming more integrated and more holistic in how I am as a spiritual being. So I don't have so much of a label anymore. In my own self, not so much what other people are labeling me as, but how I'm identifying myself. So that's what I'd say to that question at this point.
Couple-wise, you know, the hard part is I could say the same thing. So there are differences. I don't do yoga, and I'm not that interested. I was a martial artist, but I got hurt and I don't practice anymore, but I went through it and I achieved a black belt and I was really dedicated. So I understand that. And what Kathleen, when she talks about that, I was part of that and I wish I could still be a part of that. I'm not as much of an activist, but her interest in that intrigues me. And I don't want to do what she does, which is the active part. I don't want to go on marches. I don't want to write letters to the editor. But the intellectual part of that and trying to support in my own way issues around social justice and racism and misogyny and overcoming that. Oh, yeah, that's really important. And I can feel her influence on that. And I listen to that and I try to support her. And then in my own way, I'm getting more and more interested in that. So we don't do the same thing, but in general, like I'm very interested in integrating psychology and mysticism and spirituality. Right. To me, that's really exciting And I feel much more open and able to do that since I'm not part of an organization with some boundaries around it and some strictures. But Kathleen's kind of on the same integrative approach. I don't know what it would be if we were like, one of us was a fundamentalist and the other one wasn't, and what that would be like. That one, I don't know that.
I can't imagine in our case.
Well, right, but if that were to happen, like I was having this fantasy, what would I do with a really fundamentalist Roman Catholic? I don't know if I would have the respect there. Like I would try, maybe, on a good day, but part of me would be saying, what are you talking about? But I'm not sure that has to do with spirituality. You know, that's like Kathleen had jokingly said, Democrats and Republicans. At some point you say, I'm trying to understand, but there's something that's not clicking here. And then I can see how that would eat away at a relationship, or you would have to do something to compensate.
I have a friend who's in a relationship where that's an issue. She's liberal. Her husband is a Trump supporter. And they just don't talk about it. Yeah. And that's how they deal with it.
That must be tough.
Not necessarily. There's all kinds of things. You and I don't talk much about housework. About homemaking. Like, I know it's very important to you and I have a whole different standard of it. It's not something that I go like, oh my God, you know, I can't believe that, you know, she's that way, or I never, if I'd known that at the beginning. That actually segues though into a really important point. I'm at a stage in my life, I'm 65, and I'm at a stage where, you know, I've done various things and I currently have standards based on those experiences. But if I meet somebody and they're with a person and it's not ideal, it's like, I can totally relate to that. I've done that for significant portions of my life. I've worked in organizations that I ideologically feel are quite the antithesis, quite the opposite of my values. I've been closely associated, in fact, even called friends with people with different ideological stuff. And it's just now I've got a bit more awareness of what my criteria are. But, you know, a lot of my life I actually spent learning, like, what is it that's important? You know, when I was talking about the other person, my previous partner, who was not interested in a part of me, and I realized, okay, that's something that in future is going to be an important criteria. I don't want to feel that I'm being mooted or being kind of, you know, patted on the head.
Right. Yeah, I resonate with that.
That's important going forward, but I'm not going to throw out my relationship with this person because I've now changed, and it's like, as much as possible, I'm a person like, okay, let's actually discuss it. Let's see if we can make it work. And at some point you realize, okay, this isn't going to work. Or you realize, like, okay, we can agree to disagree and we can just not talk about things.
Yeah. It's kind of like what I was saying earlier with my family, where I was always really keenly aware of somebody coming and bursting my bubble. When my brother sat me down one day and told me that there was no God, and I was 10 years old, and I was just like dumbfounded. It was like being told there was no Santa, but on a whole other level.
Yeah, right.
When I became an adult and started looking at these different paths and taking yoga and whatnot, I kept it hidden from my family for a long time because I didn't want one of them to sit me down and say, you know, this is bullshit. Mm-hmm. So it was really important to me to find a partner that had similar, didn't have to be the same values in that apartment. Like, he could be a Buddhist and I could be Sufi or whatever, or he could be Catholic. I had no issue with even dating somebody from my faith. I never did. as long as they didn't try to tell me that what my beliefs were not true, right. Tried to diminish them. Mm-hmm.
So should we open it up to the people on Zoom? They have any questions or anything they would like to add?
There's a question about our Catholic upbringing.
Just to clarify in the question, I didn't have a Catholic upbringing.
Well, I did, and I can remember the first real confrontation I had with my own religion was having been told that only Catholics could go to heaven. I announced this to my best friend, and she said, "That's not true." And it was the first moment I realized, oh, right, you know, there's all these people in the world. At the time, I thought of them as, well, there's all these Chinese people in the world, and they're not Catholic, so why would God keep them out of heaven in my little 7-year-old mind? And that was the beginning for me of realizing this is programming that I didn't think of it in that way, but this is not true. My friend saying it's not true made me think, well, yeah, how could this be true? Mm-hmm. So that was the beginning of the questioning for me. And I can remember another time in grade school going to religious education, which I really didn't like, but had to go. And someone telling me, you know, the Jews killed Jesus. And I remember thinking, well, not these Jews around us. And, you know, then much later on, realizing Jesus himself was Jewish. So how are we holding the Jews responsible for Jesus' death? And then later on in adolescence, realizing that there were a bunch of old men in Rome who were going to tell me that I could or couldn't use birth control. And at that age was not an issue for me, but I knew it would be. And that was really the beginning of the end of that Catholic programming. However, I will say that I credit my upbringing for giving me a very solid sense of the divine, maybe not an accurate one, but a solid one. And when I do attend a mass for a funeral or a wedding or something like that, I feel a sense of gratitude, and I can appreciate the beauty of it, even though for me, it's no longer what I want to ascribe to myself.
Very well said.
You know, when we were talking about the ideological things, there can be things like, for example, if somebody's vegan, if there's things like food intolerance, that's one thing, because it's kind of like, okay, that's a medical thing. But actually, like an ideological decision, if somebody says, okay, I'm vegetarian for ethical reasons, or I'm vegan for ethical reasons, that can kind of create an interesting thing in a couple. It's like, hang out with a bunch of old guys, and one of the topics that we talked about one day was like, if one of you goes on a diet, do both of you go on a diet? And it was really interesting to hear people weigh in on, well, no, I'm not going to, or like, of course I do. It was an interesting topic to kind of evolve from various people's point of view. And some people were quite adamant, like, that's not my problem, and it's not my thing, and I'm not going to reduce my enjoyment of life. Like, if even if she's a vegan, she still has to make me bacon. And okay.
Sounds like a slogan.
But you have a point, because that's, how is that different than people on different spiritual paths, or one person on the path and the other isn't, and not respecting the other or expecting something of the other?
Right, right.
I'm not sure it has to do with, yes, it's how you define spirituality, I guess. I think, you know, veganism can be a spiritual path. I don't think of it that way, but I bet a lot of vegans do. And I think we're getting around to the idea of do we respect with what is meaningful in the other person, and do we feel respected by the other person in whatever it is? And we may have the same exact path, was never exact, but the same interests, or they may be different, but is there enough common ground that we can respect and share? And I'm not sure that's a matter of spirituality.
There's also a question of how rigid is someone going to be?
Right,
like,
right.
For example, I don't eat meat, but I don't require there to be no meat in my house.
Right.
And obviously there is quite a bit of meat in the house because my dude likes to eat meat. I'm not fearful of touching meat or having it cooked in separate cookware or anything like that. So my feeling would be not to be rigid, not to be imposing my point of view on my partner or him imposing it on me. If he were to say to me, oh, come on, you know, eat a piece of meat, it's not going to kill you. We just don't have that between us.
One of the other things that I notice in couples is it's an opportunity to stand up for myself. There might be something that I hadn't really, like, it's important to me, but I hadn't really ever had to externalize it before. But somebody living in close proximity experiences it, and it's a chance for me to actually say, this is important to me. And it might be, for example, something that a social friend would never run into, but it's something relating to my home situation. I'm trying to think of an example. Maybe something like what kind of movies I watch on Netflix. Okay, so it's no longer immaterial to the relationship what kind of movies that I watch. And the other person goes like, okay, this is something I'm really uncomfortable with or I have a problem with. Or I could say something like, okay, on this topic, I need you to back off a bit. I need you to not hassle me about this thing that I like doing or that's important to me. I realize that you don't like it. I realize that it's not according to your values, but it's something that I'm doing or experiencing. And so that's like within a relationship. Within a social relationship, you can just not do that when that person is around.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's somebody I know who really likes violent movies. And I've learned if that person says, hey, let's go to a movie, chances are my response is I'm busy that night. You know?
Right.
It's totally different in a domestic, like in an intimate situation. It's like, okay, now I actually have to explain why I'm busy every time let's to go see such and such movie.
So a question came up.
Yeah.
Would like to explore more in depth what is the threshold of how similar or different your paths can be in order to stay in that truly respectful and mutually enriching relationship we're all talking about.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's a really good point. I think there is a kind of base level of values. The values are important, but when you get in a domestic situation, it's also the practices can become important. Like, for example, if somebody is holding to a kosher diet.
Mm-hmm.
I use a diet, for example, but it can also be like if there's somebody who's doing the Islamic 5 daily prayers, you know, and is doing the midnight prayers. There's definitely places where there can be friction.
Right.
That's something that you have to feel dynamically, like, can I still feel that I'm respected or that I'm at least allowed to? That for me, that's where it's the allowance. Like if this person feels that they have to correct me in my behavior, I really quickly get to, it very quickly passes into the orange light or the red light in terms of a relationship. But if they kind of feel different, but they don't have to correct me, then it's like, okay, then I think we can respect each other.
So the level might be going to be so individualistic, but for me, I think it's, can we be neutral, at least neutral, maybe allow, I can't find the right word. What I think disallowing is a, would be a problem. So always, like the example you used, Darren, about the five times a day prayer, if every time the practitioner is to do their prayers, it was a complaint. You're doing that again? We're supposed to have dinner. That might be something. Or if every time you do something that's important to you, somebody else makes fun of that.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I'm not talking about one-time things like, I mean, I can imagine something like, well, I know you do this regularly, but can't we make an exception today? Our daughter is graduating, you know, we have to go. Something like that. That, even that, I suppose, you know, again, that's a, where's the meeting point? Somebody might say, no, nothing is more important than me doing this. So the rest of the world has to wait.
Mm-hmm.
I had something in medical school. It was my first year of med school, and we were actually learning gross anatomy, and we were actually, four of us were a team working on a cadaver. We were still doing that back in those days. And one of the team members was an Orthodox Jewish person who refused to come to class on the Sabbath. But the rest of us had class. And we had a lot of work to do, and we would have to go in extra hours to keep up. And he would not budge. You don't do this on the Sabbath. Well, there were three other members of the team who weren't Orthodox Jewish and didn't want to. We could respect him not coming in, but then he was falling behind. And we were saying, I can't help you with that. I don't know what to do. Come in on your own. Well, you come in with me. No, I don't have time to do that. And he didn't make it. And it wasn't, I don't think it was a tolerant school for something like that anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of an issue where he would not budge. The form of his religion took precedence over everything else. And I found myself saying, well, that's okay for you, but don't impose that on me. And I don't know how you work on that. Because in the culture you're in right now, in this particular school in America, that's not the schedule. You're going to have to figure that out. You know, something like that. And I can imagine in a couple's relationship, what would that be like?
People change over time.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know, for example, I was a certain way. And then when our son was born, overnight, my whole personality changed. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea it was going to change. There is now something in my life that is totally more important than my job, various other things. It's like, you know, I had no kind of preparation that was going to happen. But those kind of things, it can be like, for example, things like partner's attitude to what happens if a family member needs you. You know, and that can be a surprise thing. Like at some point you kind of go, okay, well, my parents are healthy, but then something happens and, you know, is that okay for Louise that I drop everything and go look after them?
Right.
Those kind of things can come up and be really surprising and really problematic. Because it's like, you know, we see this other person acting in ways that we're really not comfortable with.
Right. Maybe we should wrap it up. If you know friends who might want to participate, like you all did, hear or make comments, send their email with their permission, of course, to Louise. You can also send it to me because I will put them on the Amberlight list so they'll get notified not only about podcasts, but other workshops that we're developing. So I hope we can keep expanding slowly with really interesting topics. Thank you.